You're on. Hey, welcome to the Two Guys in a PLC Automation Podcast. I'm John Marchando, and I'm joined by my colleague,
David Gutschall. How are you, everybody? Great to be here today. And as usual, I'll throw the disclaimer out there. This is for entertainment purposes only. Everything you hear is the views of the individuals on this call and not our day job, our employer, or anyone else other than the three idiots on the phone call. Wait, did I say phone call? It's a freaking podcast, John. I can't believe I said phone call.
It's okay, man. That's okay. No worries. And we've got our first guest on with us today, Steve Ganson, who is a colleague of ours.
Hey, everybody. I like the way you framed it. Three idiots. Thanks, Dave. That's it.
Three idiots and a PLC.
At least two idiots. Maybe there's only two idiots. Not it. No, I'm kidding.
Glad to be here with you guys. This is awesome. This is a lot of fun.
We hope.
We are just getting started. Yes. So, hey, you know, as a point of information, Steve, why don't you just kind of introduce yourself? Give us the 30-second overview of Steve Ganson and who you are and what makes you go, and we'll kind of start there.
Yeah, I sure will. And John, you know me quite well. You know me doing anything inside of 30 seconds is a tall order. But yeah, I'll try. I'll give it a shot. hey, good morning, everybody. So I'm Steve Ganson. I work for Cisco, and I'm in our industry sales group, and I run our manufacturing sales vertical for the Americas. Before that, I've been at Cisco for 10 years. Before that, I worked at Rockwell Automation for 25 years. And then Siemens for another year. So anybody doing the math, yep, I'm a pretty old guy. But always been in manufacturing sales, always been, you know, helping customers kind of get to their future-proofing their operations and things like that. So, yeah, love it. Love it. Been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, great. I'm so happy you're freaking here, Mr. Ganson. And you have what are we going to call it? The distinguished honor being the first person through the podcast ringer and hearing all of the back end shenanigans of us trying to set this sucker up. And actually, right before we were trying to kick it off this morning, we were dealing with some technical hurdles. And, you know, it's just amazing to me how, depending on the platform that you try and use to kick this off, my goodness, it can be freaking complicated. So glad we ran into Riverside. We're not intentionally plugging it, but yeah, man, once John and I found this, it was like, wow, this is so much easier. Why the heck didn't we start here?
Yeah, total game changer from that perspective. I'll tell you, it just makes things so much easier.
You know, it's funny too. I mean, I know we want to talk about manufacturing and, you know, two guys in a PLC, but, you know, just that little hurdle and that little exercise you went through, it's the same exercise our customers go through every minute of every day. Right? Trying to find the right platform, trying to find the easiest thing, trying to find the best bail, whatever. So, you know, you got to search, you got to kick the tires, you got to figure it out. And then eventually you arrive at what's right. And I love this platform. This was super easy. I mean, I just logged in and bam, there it was.
Yeah. Crazy, right? So, what a wonderful segue, right? To exactly what you said, right? And the challenge our customers have is, at least with this, you know, we could have restarted it five different times. Like, oh, wait, no, that didn't work. Let's try it again. Shoot, we can't start it on time. We'll have to start a little later. Customers generally don't have that luxury. If they start 10 minutes later, those are really expensive 10 minutes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the other aspect of that is that they can't afford the downtime when something goes wrong to turn around and go, well, what the heck just happened there?
So, no. Yeah. No, it's like the devil they know in so many cases is the devil they don't. So it's, you know, you want to know why sometimes they get into these spots where it's like, wait, no, I don't really want to change it. No, I know I need to change it, but when am I supposed to have time to change it? Because to your point, I don't have time to kick the tires.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, I got a question for you just to kind of kick things off and start, you know, the Q&A.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you went from the controls industry, Rockwell, who is probably the number one vendor of control systems in North America at best. And at worst, they might be I'll just say they're number one. We all know that. What's it like moving into the communications world and the Cisco world from an OT-centric company like Rockwell?
Oh, John, that's a great question. And I'll tell you honestly, the first couple of months were terrifying for me when I made that change. I wanted to make the change because, working at Rockwell, and what a great company. I had kind of climbed the mountain, to where I needed to be with our customers. And we always talked about the automation layer and what we can do for automation with the machines, with maintenance, with, faster, I don't know, more cases per second or whatever it was. But then Rockwell kind of at that point, they kind of stopped at the, what do we do next? I mean, they're serving up the data, but there wasn't a path toward what we do with that data. I mean, some of the data, of course, right? Some of the PLC and the automation data, they made decisions from the plant, the golden batch, the advanced process controls, things like that. But there was this giant space up above the DMZ that was kind of an unknown to me. And I thought, you know what? And we covered it earlier. I'm an old guy, and I was an old guy 10 years ago. But I kind of decided I got another mountain in me to climb. Like more, there's more value we can give to our customers if that talk track goes further north in the, with their customers and with their business a little bit outside of the cement floor. So it's been fascinating because I've learned a ton and been able to bring that to customers, but learned a ton around how to have a different conversation, more toward business outcomes. So I don't know if that
Yeah,
answers
do you
your question,
find
but yeah.
yeah, do you find that it's harder coming at it from the communication side rather than the Rockwell side, since Rockwell is kind of the 800-pound gorilla, pardon my French there. I know that sounded like English, but is that, I mean, does that really, is it different?
It's different in terms of, we'll say customer access because at Rockwell, traditionally, now I had a, I was a global account manager and I ran, their largest account in the world. So we had access to executives, from in our Rockwell card got us in and we had access to high level executives inside of, well, inside of Nestlé, we can say the customer. But traditionally that's not the case because look where Rockwell plays, right? It's in the automation space. So controls engineers, plant managers. I mean, that's kind of where it was. And there were decisions that were made north of that Rockwell had a hard time getting to. Cisco being, just being the mighty machine it is, we've got access to executives at the customers that do include that automation layer. Like we can get to the CIO, the CEO, the COO, and have conversations with them about pivoting their business. It's not because they're like the biggest, best buying influence, but they do have an understanding, a different understanding of their business because what they care about is not about what's next, but what about what's after next. That's what they care about. Where a plant manager has different cares. And by the way, those are important cares, like no downtime, absolutely no downtime. Make sure that the supply chain is managed. Make sure we don't starve the equipment or starve the machines for throughput. I mean, different sets of challenges, but as you can get a little bit north of that, then you can get a different landscape with the customer. And I think that's been incredibly beneficial to change the
Yeah.
conversation.
Yeah. Steve,
Very
I
cool.
got another question on that kind of look to your point, right? You had access to those C-level execs. The Rockwell card got you in the door because to John's point, Rockwell is the 800-pound gorilla. In our day jobs, right, with Cisco tends to be, the Cisco card doesn't always get us in that door. It may get us in the network engineering door. It may get us in the CIO's door. It doesn't always get us in the doors for the folks that are in charge of ops. And we might have to partner with
Right.
somebody or what have you, because Cisco isn't necessarily seen as, well, of course, you need to let them in the door. They're Cisco.
Yeah,
So
right.
kind of curious, look, you look at Rockwell's numbers, right? They've been sort of flat to slightly down lately. Do you see, is there been a shift, let's say, from your original days at co as covering Nestle, where, hey, it's Rockwell, let them in the door. They've clearly got something important to talk to us about, and we trust them. Is that still the way that works over there? Is that, in other words, is that card still allowing that same kind of access, or has that changed a bit?
Yeah, I think it's changed. I think executives at companies have really gained an understanding of, kind of where the money is, right? Where the money's made. It's not like they didn't understand it before, but I think there's more clarity to it now. So I think they absolutely understand what unscheduled downtime means to their bottom line. And they can tell you, like, if you ask somebody, do you know what your cost of downtime is? They all know that answer. Every single one of them, you know, above that, you know, above the northbound areas we were talking about. So I think there's a focus both ways. I think there's a focus, you know, on companies like Rockwell that are doing the automation layer to elevate, to have those different conversations, but have those conversations to have a different impact. And I think there's an effort, you know, southbound from the executives at the customers to say, I really want to understand that. But it wasn't that long ago, I read a report where, you know, the average length of, I don't know, employment or the average length of time for a CIO at a customer was 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a long time. I mean, that was your CIO career at a customer. That has really changed because the CIOs have taken, I should say the IT teams have taken a huge interest in what's happening below that DMZ, the networks on the plant floor. They're trying to add value to the company, maybe more than they used to. So yeah, they're kind of meeting in the middle. So I do see a bit of a change, Dave. That was a really long answer.
No,
question.
It's okay. Heck, my question was really long too, so I didn't get to the point either right away. Yeah, all good there. I'm curious, Steve. So you hit on something there that I think is critical in our day job too, and that is that, right, we generally have, again, we have the golden card to get in front of IT generally. And as they're moving to try and, to your point, make more of a business impact, to recognize, look, I can't just be a cost center anymore. I've got to enable the money printer to work. I can't just lob technologies over the wall anymore. I've got to be that enablement engine and move out of, again, like, why are we throwing all this money at IT? They've got to be seen as really a driver. That tends to help us because suddenly, you know, I'm going to call it us being sort of the hidden solution in the corner gets more important. But what it also does,
the credibility card gets played, right?
Yeah. That's exactly it, right? But at the same time, right, you know, I'm going to call it what we hear a lot is it's like, well, okay, yeah, but, you know, help me link this, you know, help me link what you guys are talking about, you know, to that business outcome or to that thing that I'm trying to accomplish. And yet, back to my earlier question about do you think it has changed on the Rockwell front, I feel like that line is really bright. Like it's blatantly, brutally obvious how what they do directly impacts that bottom line. Mm-hmm. In our day jobs, it's still fuzzy. We still have to paint that picture. And mm-hmm. painting that picture is not always easy, depending on who's in that room.
And you only get a short amount of time to land that big idea to get their attention. And if you miss that, you're done.
Right.
At least I wouldn't say, but maybe not done, but it's going to be harder for you to claw back in there.
Yeah.
If you lose their attention.
But and maybe that's the opportunity to, it seems like lately more and more, we find ourselves in customer meetings where there's IT and OT sitting in the room because they are both the stakeholders, right? You mentioned cost centers and then OT is the profit center, right? Everybody recognizes that. You know, OT, for a company that has a vision for the future, OT has an unlimited budget. IT has always struggled with, oh, geez, the year just started. Yeah. You know, I have, you know, $400 million, you know, whatever the number is to spend. By day one of the new year, they've already spent it because they've spent the last 3 months getting proposals and RFQs. And, you know, it's like, boom, okay, we're spending it traditionally or historically. OT, if you sit down with the buying influences on OT and say, hey, we have this opportunity, you know, to secure your network. Maybe you just got breached. We have this opportunity to increase your productivity by, you know, by 4 tires per day or, you know, whatever that number is. They will go find the money because they'd be crazy not to. I mean, show them an ROI of 1 year for, you know, $20 million. Crazy not to go find that money. So kind of what's happening now, you know, more and more of the meetings we're having, IT and OT are sitting in the same room. So they're kind of, they're bridging that gap themselves because they realize the importance of that gap. Mm-hmm. If they don't, if it's still kind of the Cold War where IT's over here and OT, mm-hmm. OT's over mm-hmm. there, which still happens. I'm not saying
yeah, a lot of places.
Well, look, an OT, the guys in OT have got a credit card that they can use to buy up to like $5,000. So, I mean, if he needs something, he goes, I need a switch there. They go buy it.
They don't have to worry
about going through the purchasing process. They've got a P card and they just go.
Yep.
Absolutely. For that reason, you know, for those reasons.
Exactly.
Because they need to make, you know, they need to make their decisions pretty fast. But if OT's not sitting in the room, then it's a bit of a two-step dance. The folks in IT, they absolutely are focused. I mean, they're shareholders too. They're employees too. They want their company to be around in 50 years and to be profitable for those 50 years. So, it can be a two-step dance where we talk to them about, cybersecurity on the plant floor. And they're like, well, we don't own the plant floor. Well, then who does? Well, that's OT. Well, great. Let's bring them in, right? Let's have a meeting. Let's all come together. So there's, one bigger solution or let's talk about AI, right? AI is probably the widest bridge that's going to be between IT and OT as we start accelerating down this path of AI for manufacturing. So they just have to be in the room together. But it's happening more and more, I think.
I feel like even 5 years ago, I'll do the everybody's favorite thing, pre-COVID and post-COVID. I feel like pre-COVID, more often than not, IT and OT were not, there was no bridges being built. It was the Hatfields and the McCoys. If you went into a company and saw them getting along or talking, that was the exception. I feel like post-COVID, it's actually flipped. More companies are building bridges. They may not be, they may not be singing Kumbaya, but they're talking. They want to work together. In fact, there was a survey. I don't remember if it was in one of Cisco's surveys or it may have been somebody else's. But the big thing that I noticed from it was this sort of flipping of the order on the reasons why IT-OT partnering is not happening. It used to be basically, it's not happening because we don't want to do it. It's not important. Doesn't need to happen. What have you. And now it's flipped to wait a minute. No, leadership does buy into it. We need to do this. It's a business imperative to figure out how to build those bridges. And to your point, Steve, what I used to always say before kind of AI became the big wave that's knocking everybody over, the two places OT and IT generally met was in the RF spectrum space, so Wi-Fi wireless space, and in the security space, because everybody cared about security. Wi-Fi is a shared spectrum. But those are, in a lot of cases, wireless feels complicated and security feels nebulous and large and broad. Whereas for whatever reason, even though it's also very broad, AI is coming up I joked the other day in an internal room where we were talking about, we had a buzzword bingo card. And I said, I think my bingo card's broken. AI is in 9 of my 12 squares.
Yeah. And it's, you're right on. It's like a drinking game. Every time somebody says AI, take a drink. It's much of the conversations that you're having with partners and customers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a hard one to get our arms around, as AI continues to accelerate in manufacturing, part of the reasons why IT and OT absolutely have to come together to talk about this is the business cases it drives, right? The relevancy it drives because the value is down on the plant floor. When we're talking about AI for the plant, the value is
for
down
the
there.
Plant.
It's in, unscheduled downtime. It's in preventative maintenance. It's in predictive maintenance. It's in, helping the labor force, the workers on the plant. They haven't been around for 30 years working on this same machine. We see that. We could talk all day about, the available workforce in manufacturing. Not only is it shrinking, it's shrinking at an unbelievable pace. And it's going to get worse by the end of the decade. We saw how many factories are going to be built in North America by the end of the decade, 1,200 new factories. So that's going to strain that labor force even more, which means every plant has to do more with less. And AI becomes that kind of that pivot point. We absolutely have to have IT and OT part of that conversation.
Yeah, 100%.
Definitely.
When you were working actually in manufacturing and you were that IT-OT person that did the convergence, the most important thing to make a successful project was the people.
Absolutely.
Right? You've said that to me
absolutely.
A million times. They have to be part of that process and part of that
plan early,
and part of that
early.
Future-proofing. So that's really pulling those
people
together.
People hate change. The more runway you give them to figure it out, the better. I want to go back to the AI topic for a second. I'm going to throw maybe a controversial comment out here, and I want to hear your takes. So if you remember, when we first started talking about IoT in manufacturing, old gray beard controls guys would raise their hand and go, stop, We've been doing that crap for 30 years. Get out of here. I submit to you that when you say AI, the controls guy is going to raise his hand and go, stop. We've been doing data analysis, analytics, collection, and decision-making, and the freaking PLC has got code in here to do the same shit for 30 years. We'll have to bleep that. So what I want to hear from both of you is yes or no and why.
Go ahead, John.
No, I honestly...
So if you remember... Back when IoT was first being thrown out, we would say, you know, IoT and manufacturing, the old graybeard manufacturing guy would raise his or her hand and go, you know, stop. We've been doing that for 30 freaking years. And I submit to you that maybe if you start throwing AI out to those same people, they're going to raise their hand and go, stop. We've been doing that in the plant for 30 years too. The controllers have been doing this. We've been doing data analysis. The PLC is responsible for this. We've been talking about analytics since 2005. We've got more freaking data and analysts and we're doing more analytics on more data than you've ever seen. What the heck is the difference? And so what I'm asking is yes or no. Are the old graybeards right or not? And why yes or why no? I think I explained it better the first time, John. Go rewind and listen to the first time I explained it.
I'm good. Yeah, I know where you're going. And Steve invited me to answer first, so I'll stumble around and make sure I answer. I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's yes and no. I think there are some things that, like predictive maintenance, for example, there are systems out there that are monitoring and looking at bearings on motors and things like that. The thing that I typically find, though, with those is they wait until those things fail and then they fix them. So I think what AI may help us with is, hey, it's time to go fix this. I just ordered the part. And so I think there's a lot of things that AI can do that are over and above what they're currently doing that they feel like is AI already. I mean, again, I think it's yes and no. So Steve, I'll toss it to you.
No, John, you're 100% spot on. I would have answered the same way, and I'll give just a little bit more or different color. You know, it's interesting for the you know, the folks who would say, no, we've been doing this for 30 years. You can't walk into a plant now and find a giant panel of relays and contactors, because that was the predecessor to the PLC, right? Oh, we do it with relays. I mean, eventually you move forward. Eventually those people, you know, I'm sure before the PLC comments, it was, no, we do this with relays. You know, that PLC is a crazy contraption. And then everybody migrated to the PLC, and those are kind of table stakes now in manufacturing. So there is a mindset, I think now, maybe different than there was then, of adaptability to change. I think everybody gets it, that what it took to get us here isn't enough to keep us here. But yeah, to John's point, great point. It's a yes and a no, because you can't just throw out everything you've learned. Like if he's going to do a predictive model with, you know, with any kind of large language models on a machine to look at bearing wear out or whatever, that has to come from historical data. That has to come from that person who's been working on that machine for 40 years. It's kind of a tipping point that we're at with AI and a lot of technologies to say it is the best of both worlds that we need to bring together to go forward. So, but
yeah, it's not about replacing people's jobs. It's about making you more effective at your job today.
Right.
Absolutely.
And doing more with less, like we talked about. I mean, it's not like you're eliminating jobs. You're trying to survive as a manufacturer with 30% of a workforce that you had back in the PLC days. I mean, I know I've probably told you guys a story, but I was doing a plant tour, maybe a month ago in a, you know, an automotive tier one supplier. And, you know, there's all these workers on the plant floor and they're, you know, they're making products for cars. I won't say who it is.
I might've been there.
You actually were there. And I forgot about that, John. You 100% were there. And what did that guy tell us? He told us, you know, we asked the question, do you have an issue with, you know, with your workers on your plant floor? And he said, I have 100% have a problem. You see those 100 people on that line, they may not all come back from lunch. So it's not just I'm retiring and here's my 2 weeks notice. It's day by day, they have to respond to these really pressing issues, which means they have to do more with less all the time, which is such a, you know, such a.
Yeah, I think the, so I'll give you my 2 cents or maybe 4 cents. I'm not sure. It depends on how long I can get my thoughts out here. You, by the way, I love both your answers. I think the first thing to make sure we're all kind of on the same page on is what's everybody's definition specifically, right? When we throw out AI, what are we talking about? And in my mind, the very first thing that I think of is training a model to help us make a decision, whatever that looks like.
I thought you were going to say Schwarzenegger and Terminator, but.
Oh my goodness. Right. Yeah. That's.
Let's go there.
Oh my. Yeah, right. Let's not go there. You know what? That's another topic for another podcast. Ooh, I could put my tinfoil hat on and have, oh my. Yeah. Let's not do that on this one. We're going to run out of time. I think, assuming we're all in that same space, I think the deal here is before we were using the word AI, when we simply were talking about leveraging an analytics model to make some decisions, what do we say? Garbage in, garbage out. To your point, if we didn't have the right kind of data to make the decision, it didn't matter whether the human was doing it or the analytics engine was doing it, we would not make a good decision afterwards. This is literally no different, except we are probably automating, using that word, we're using that more to make more iterative tries at it, to potentially fail quicker and fail faster, all potentially with even less human input, which is, I think, what both of you essentially said, is that we're going to be doing similar things we were before, we're going to be able to iterate faster, and we hopefully can do it with less people. But you still need the humans on the front end to validate what the heck is going into the model is accurate. Because if you don't have the people that know the process, you don't have the people that understand what good looks like, and you don't have the people to smell test what it is that it is coming out with, you can easily have a garbage model. AI is not magic.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Garbage in, garbage out.
That's just nothing like changes. ISO 9000. It doesn't have anything to do with the quality of the product. It's just the process you follow to manufacture it.
Yeah. Right. Right. Great analogy, John.
Yeah, I love that analogy.
And we talk a lot about, AI, for manufacturing on John, you mentioned the bearings and the heat of the motors. I mean, that's really such a great application for, preventive and predictive downtime. But, there's others too. There's a big push right now for, we'll just call it, customer experience or customer satisfaction. Think about this. Think about, and I'm only thinking about it because we're in that season right now. So if you're a John Deere or a Caterpillar or a Komatsu or farming equipment. I mean, let's just say John Deere, giant farming equipment, right? These farmers spend $1 million on a combine. They spend hundreds and hundreds of thousand dollars on tractors. And really, they only need them absolutely, I shouldn't say only, but they do absolutely need them 2 times a year. Planting season, harvesting season. Absolutely can't break a $1 million combine when they're trying to harvest, 4,000 acres of corn and they have a small window to do it.
And it's probably a month total of use of the equipment, right?
Yeah.
Between both seasons. I mean, it's very short.
Right. So talk about analytics. And they're loaded with analytics, right? So these combines, they have tools on the – I know my wife's uncle, he's a giant farmer in Wisconsin, and he'll run his combine out in the field, and they'll run it for a little bit and go, now the soybean beans are still a little too moist or they're too dry. Or, they're monitoring it every day till all of a sudden it's like – and when it's go, it's go. They release them all into the fields because, there's a very limited time maybe to harvest soybeans. I'm not a farmer, but I'm understanding that part of it. So what do these companies like Deere do is they load their equipment, their combines and their tractors and they load them with analytics because they cannot have that farmer fail in the middle of his harvesting. So there's an AI play kind of outside the walls. It's outside, it's in the fields, it's on the streets, it's in construction zones, it's things like that. So it's gathering a lot of momentum for helping people be more productive kind of even outside of that.
Ganson, do you know, I have not been able to get this out of my head since you said there are 2 seasons. Do you know what went through my head? Duck season. Wabbit season.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry.
my favorite cartoon. Are you kidding me? We could do a whole nother podcast on cartoons.
I have been I'm like, you totally distracted me.
Hey, so let's change this around a little bit. So, Steve, one of the things that we find that in at least lately that's been coming up is this virtual PLC where we're basically hosting the PLC somewhere else. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I don't really know exactly where my head is, but would love to get your input on that.
You know, it's funny, John. You know, back when I was working at Rockwell, Rockwell did that. I'm trying to think of what years it was. It was called a soft PLC. So it was actually sitting in a server. It was sitting in a computer. It wasn't on a rack out in a cabinet, out on a machine. You know, they thought, you know, that, and this was, gosh, you know, 20 years ago. It was a long time ago. It was very forward thinking on their part. And there was a bit of a pullback from it. I don't really know why. You know, I wasn't part of the group that made the decision go, no go. I was part of the group that sold whatever they told us to sell. But I think it's kind of inevitable. I think more and more is becoming virtual. More and more is being done, you know, either in the cloud, which we can do a whole nother podcast on cloud versus on-prem.
Oh, yeah.
The big swings that are happening there for manufacturing as they're kind of pulling it back more to the edge. But I think it's kind of inevitable. I know companies are pursuing concepts on that right now. They've got science projects going. Maybe the science projects are further than I think, and they're getting ready to release those products. But you know, what does it do? At the end of the day, it puts more data on that network, which is great. So there's more visibility to stuff, but it shrinks that cabinet out there. But shrinks that control cabinet, which shrinks your floor space, which means maybe you can put another line in your existing factory, I know a cabinet won't make that difference, but we all know the value of floor space on a manufacturing plant. If they can find a way to relieve that, that's a good thing.
All right, Ganson.
Yeah, and
I'm throwing the yellow BS flag. BS flag.
Oh, all right. You're throwing a flag on me?
So you said before you've been around for what? 100 years or 120 years? I forget which.
120.
Anyway, 120. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you got a controls guy. He's responsible for that freaking line. And when that thing breaks, he walks over to the freaking shelf of the PLC and he goes, let me make sure all of these LEDs are green. Are the flashing blinkies blinking? Oh, they're not blinking. I'm going to unseat this ENBT card and I'm going to reseat it. Is it blinking now? Shoot, it's not blinking. Well, I'm going to go power the shelf off and I'm going to go power the shelf back on. Okay, now it's blinking again. Awesome, I've recovered the line. Now, Mr. Ganson. I want you to tell that controls guy, sorry, you can't reseat that ENBT card anymore. You got to log in to this little box or call your buddy up who's not a controls person. Sorry, all your responsibility. I just tell you the line's down.
Yeah, okay, and I'll kind of step in. Yeah, and I'll kind of step in there too. I mean, you got to find a way to virtualize what the PLC looks like, which is what the soft PLC stuff did in the early days of that, right? They would have a virtual representation, not digital twin maybe, of the PLC rack. And then you would take a look at all the LEDs, and that's how you troubleshoot the soft PLC. So I'll throw it over to Steve now that gave you my two cents.
I love your flag. You know what? So now that the NFL season kicked off last night, we do have challenge flags. I love that. So you threw.
Oh my God! And yeah, you know what? The freaking refs need replaced. My gosh! Don't.
So
we could do another podcast
for Ravens.
On that.
That's right. You're a Ravens fan. That's right. I forgot.
I'm okay
they
with
lost.
Calling BS if you call a BS freaking equally. Can we call the BS equally, please? My God, man.
Coming from clearly not a Chiefs fan. So
jeez.
I'll tell you this, that's funny because we were just talking about, you know, gray beards that don't like change. And I'll tell you, Dave, you know, we are headed in that direction. I mean, we are really headed in that direction. To John's point, it's virtualized. It looks the same. But then you have to we have to step back and maybe expand our field of view. There was an IoT analytics report I saw not that long ago that said, who are manufacturers hiring? What does the help wanted ad look like, you know, for the skills force that are going into manufacturing? You know what it said? Math skills, problem solving skills, computer skills. What it didn't say was good with a hammer, good with a wrench, good with looking at the lights and replacing the antique card, which I'm not saying that's not important, but I am saying the evolution of that technology, the people on the floor are everything. They're the lifeblood to the manufacturing plant. But this will evolve. The two largest automation PLC companies in the world are going down this path. And one of them is very close to releasing a new product. So it's not going to be, you know, stop, start. It's going to be an evolution over time, maybe where it makes sense. Maybe, you know, think about this. You know, instead of having a PLC on a crane in the middle of a, you know, a shipyard way up there, maybe that's a good virtual application to say, you know what, it can be on my desk here in the control room. I don't know. I'm not sure. But I love
the death of the PLC. Yeah, I mean, the death of the PLC has been widely overpublicized for, what, 30 years now?
Yep.
Because when soft PLCs came out,
yep.
and I can remember working with FlowPro back in the day on General Motors powertrain floor. It was all PC-based at that point, mm-hmm. and, you know, running in a real-time kernel, all that happy stuff. And they were like, oh, it's over. PLCs are done. And mm-hmm. here we are. They're still out there.
Yeah. Getting better every day.
And look, I was just playing devil's advocate a little bit. I don't disagree with you. I think what I disagree with is the speed in which people believe this is going to happen. Because look, back to the people power issue, right? You aren't automatically going to replace all of those, what I'll call, we'll just keep using the term, right? The old wisdom graybeards, right? With, you know, students coming out of college and trade schools that, you know a combination of controls, engineering, ladder logic, and networking. Don't get me wrong, that's the future, but you can't just like snap your fingers and suddenly you have all of those folks, right? Certainly they are comfortable with this concept of a virtual, they don't need to freaking touch it. Heck, they would prefer not to touch it. They would rather be in the air-conditioned office going, ooh, don't get me down there in that dirty plant, right?
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
So but you're not, we can't wholesale replace them. And when you're pros from Dover that understand traditional troubleshooting methodologies, and that is, let me touch it, let me feel it, let me look at it, let me pull the cable, let me reset the cable, you know, all of those kind of those lessons learned from touch, feel, do to point, click is the virtual, is it the hypervisor? Is it the interface? Is it something else on the back end? Is it in the magic thing called my cloud or their cloud or his cloud, which is just another person's computer, as we all know? That I think will take, I just feel as though that will take a lot longer. And back to the people comment earlier, this is one of those things where depending upon, I think, where the customer is culturally, some companies will be much more ready for it earlier and some will not.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think, unlike normal tech-wise, I don't necessarily think it automatically means that ones that aren't culturally will be behind, because it's not like the PLC vendors are suddenly going to stop making those controllers, right?
No,
because that's where their bread. That's where their bread's buttered. Let's be honest.
And the other aspect, the other aspect of that is not everybody has gone to cloud. Cloud was a popular subject 10 years ago, and not everyone's gone there. They still have, you still have cloud never companies out there that are like, nope, we're good with on-prem.
You know, what I love about this conversation, though, it brings up such a great point. And maybe we've been working toward this point the whole time and didn't really know it. But, you know, there's such an impedance mismatch. Actually, hard to say.
Impedance mismatch.
Kind of on the plant, like in manufacturing. So you think about that. We talk about the PLCs and the relays and the contactors, right? Those are step improvements. Like manufacturing would know, hey, if I add more, I don't know, if we up the moisture on the rolls of the paper before it gets into the dryers, you know, we may get more productivity. Let's do this. It's just small step changes, right? Dave, you used to work, it was small step changes, like improve process. You know what? That is not the case with digital technologies. They are exponential in change. Like, you know, we can talk about AI. We can talk about all these others. Look how fast AI has really grabbed the market. Look at all the people that are doing the perceptions and doing the large language models, these companies. They're in, you know, billions of trillions of them right now. So that's really interesting because those two meet right at that manufacturing plant. And it's really hard to match those two. And that's kind of, it's just an interesting analogy of that is maybe the first problem to solve is let's get our impedance not mismatching. Let's kind of bring it a little closer together. That's really interesting.
I love
Eli the Iceman.
Love
Eli the Iceman.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Can't believe I pulled that
That's
out.
Okay. That's okay. I love it.
The locker.
So Steve,
that's a dusty off. That's so a dusty what? Locker, John. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oof, yeah. Oof. Oof.
Hey, so along those lines, Steve, why did I read, and I can't remember where I read this, but why did I read that 85% of all AI projects fail?
Yeah.
What is, you know, where did that come from? And what's some I'm trying to think of the right word here. Some possible reasons why.
Yeah. I think, and I've read the same thing, John. So either we're both reading the wrong document or maybe you sent it to me. Maybe you sent me that.
Oh, man. That could be.
You know, I think why so many of them fail. I mean, there's maybe a couple of reasons that I've experienced or I've talked to enough AI companies about is number one, they're not patient enough, right? These AI projects are not going to be giving you your 20% return inside of a month. It's just not. That's not realistic. Yeah. And I think companies kind of lose their patience and say, listen, John, you know, we've been giving you, you know, $500,000 here and $1 million there, and we're not getting the ROI. Those things have legs, and it takes time because there's tremendous amounts of data. You got to figure out the data. You got to figure out where it's coming from, where it's going to. So I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is we want to go increase productivity in the plant. Here's a great AI solution, right? Predictive maintenance or preventative maintenance. And then they realize, okay, well, here's $1 million for this pilot project. Oh, you mean none of the plants are generating data that we can use? Machines? We can see these three machines, but not those eight machines? I mean, now all of a sudden there's an infrastructure problem or challenge. And now it's going to cost more money to elevate the data in that infrastructure. And then you got to think about a security challenge sitting on top of it. So I think there's these kind of hidden things that maybe companies either hadn't thought through or hasn't been explained to them.
Yeah, like incorrect expectations of how fast it can be done, right? Reminds me of the gap.
Oh, and that's always it. Yeah.
You know, culture in Asia Pac, you know, if you tell them it'll take, you know, 6 to 12 months to make big changes, they go, no friggin' way. It'll take us way longer than that. You ask, you know, anybody in North America that question, they go, what? We don't have that kind of time.
Yeah. We can cut that in half. Yeah. We can cut that in half.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. And the first,
well, Steve,
I think the first one, I'll just finish up real quick, John. The first one is the hardest one, right? Because you need to get that infrastructure, because you need all those wireless networks, because you need the data. So the first one is always the hardest one. But then guess what? Now you have another use case to say, I want to optimize the AGVs or I want to optimize the fork trucks in the plant. We don't want deadheading of fork trucks going from one end of the plant to the other to go pick up a load of wood to go make sofas with. Like, let's just wait 5 more minutes and they can take a load from here to there. I mean, now all of a sudden, the use cases start coming at the teams going, hey, can we improve this? Hey, can we improve that? Well, guess what? You already have the infrastructure. So now you can set those next, you know, 2 through N projects do happen a lot quicker and don't fail at that 85% mark. I think that's also something to kind of think about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you've given us several ideas. Dave and I are messaging in the background here. You've given us several other ideas for additional
topics.
Podcast subjects.
Yeah.
Things that I think we should bring you back in for as well. So
sure.
You know, this has been very, very
amazing.
Educational for me and amazing.
Yeah. 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 Educational, amazing.
Awesome.
Well, we're going to have you back,
awesome.
Steve.
I'm happy to come back anytime. I love working with you guys. This is fun.
It was fun.
Well, yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Steve, you know, again, we appreciate it. I know we're coming up against the top of the hour here, and, you know, we're not Joe Rogan yet. We can't do 3.5 hour podcasts, at least if we ever do, you'll be back for that.
Yeah. You'll be back for the 2.5 of the 3 hours.
You guys know I can talk for 2.5 to 3 hours. So you invite me back. It doesn't matter how long your podcast is.
Right on. Love it.
Sweet. Love it. Take care, Mr. Ganson. You have yourself a good weekend.
You have a great day. Thanks
again guys.
So much. Okay.
Take care.
Absolutely.